You're listening to The Zesty Garden, and in the studio with me is Shane Taylor, horticultural specialist and buyer with Cactus and Tropicals in Salt Lake City. And it's our series of recommended houseplants. And today it's a zygocactus, or as I know it, and you may know it, as a Christmas cactus. Why is this one on your list?
Oh, it's another one of those legacy plants. I mean, who doesn't have a piece of their grandparents' Christmas cactus at home?
And I've certainly, that's why I've got mine. My grandmother had this western-facing room that just was full of windows, and she had tons of plants in there, and this was one that her grandmother gave to her, and so now I've got it from my grandmother. So we're talking six generations old, and it just keeps going. I love it.
Yeah, they're amazing. They actually are a true variety of cactus, although they're a little unusual in that they don't normally, they're not found in the desert. You wouldn't walk out into the Mojave and see a zygocactus, but you'd have to find them down in the rainforest. They'd live up in the trees with the orchids and the tillandsias and the other epiphytic plants. They perch on the sides of trees. And
so it's an epiphyte?
It's an epiphyte, yep.
So how come I've got mine in soil?
Well, that's how they've grown them for years. And the cultivars that we have nowadays are well adapted to porous, well-draining soil, and they do well in that. They have adapted to life in soil way better than orchids ever did, or any of the other varieties of epiphytic plants. They're a little bit like staghorn ferns in that regard, that they can adapt to life and soil even though they're an epiphyte, and they'll do just fine. They'll do great.
Okay, so this explains something with my own. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 of these, one here at work and 3 at home. And the one at home, I keep thinking, I need to split this. It's just, all it is roots.
Yeah. At the point where the soil, you always have to worry when the soil becomes really dense and compact. And because these are plants that can live for a century, if not more, it's a good idea to every 5 to 7 years get in there, poke a bunch of holes down in the soil, take a pencil or a pen, kind of stir up that soil. Try to get as much air back into the soil as possible.
So I can just poke holes into what I think it looks like it's really root-bound, just all around the plant?
Yeah. And at this point, it might be a good idea to take it out. If it's been a long time since it's been freshened up and transplanted, it would probably be a good idea to give it some fresh soil.
So maybe a little bit of both. I'm going to poke the holes in it and then transplant it into a pot one bigger size.
Yeah, step it up a little bit. Or take the opportunity, pinch a bunch of leaves off of it, and then step it down. Actually, take some of the root ball off of it and either keep it in the same size pot or move it down a little bit. And you can take those leaves that you pulled off of it and put them in soil and grow whole new plants. And that's how most people get theirs, as a start from somebody else's.
So it's kind of like an African violet. You just stick the leaves?
You just stick the leaf. Yep.
Maybe a little bit of rooting hormone?
Yeah. You can take the end that has been cut and dip it in rooting hormone, stick it in. You don't even really need rooting hormone for them to take root and grow.
So just one leaf, or do I take, like, they come, the leaves kind of keep growing on the ends of the previous leaf, and do I take a whole series of those, or just one, or yes?
Yes, both. Both work, yeah. They're an individual segment, or a whole bunch of leaves will grow. They're amazing that way. They're great.
Can you split the plant itself? Like, if I've got several branches that are coming up, can I take one of those off?
If they are individual plants in the pot, you can divide it at the root. Often you'll find that over time, if it's a really old plant, it will be maybe 1, 2 plants at most in the soil. And so dividing it's going to be a lot harder. But yeah, as long as it's two separate things, you can work the root ball apart. They have really strong roots, and sometimes it's hard to get in there and separate the root systems without just completely destroying them.
Now, the one I've got here at work, the blossoms are scarlet red, and it's in this clay pot, and it can't be more than 5 inches across, but the plant above it is probably a foot across at least, and it's sitting, it gets bright indirect light, sometimes direct light, and I figure as long as it keeps producing blossoms, that I probably don't need to step it up another pot size, even though the gardener in me wants to do that anyway, because it's just absolutely packed with roots. But this thing just keeps going. I had a huge flush of blossoms about January. And then the end of February, I had another flush, about half as many. And I'm just finishing up with the third flush. There were only like four or five blossoms on it for the whole thing. But it just was totally amazing to me.
Yeah, they're one of the hallmarks of epiphytic plants is the fact that you notice on many different kinds of epiphytes, like Phalaenopsis orchids and staghorn ferns, is that the pot is not really in regular, it's not in, what's the word for it? It's not really in scale with the plant above. They're often so much smaller, but that's because in nature, they have to really adapt to growing in these little nooks and crannies and doing their best. So these are plants that are well adapted to living in small spaces. And when you think about it, roots take a lot of the same nutrients as blooms. So I think one of the successes of your Christmas cactus is the fact that you haven't transplanted it. The fact that it doesn't need all that extra space, and the fact that it can use the nutrients that it has available to it to then flower instead of grow roots. Because if you were to take it and put it in a bigger pot, it would want to fill out that pot before its next flowering. So it may take a break from flowering for even a few years.
I don't want that.
Yeah. Well, there's another quirk about them is the reason they flower is a little bit of an interesting quirk with that type of plant. They're photosensitive. They feel the length of day. They sense how long day and night is. And when day and night, when they get an equal amount of light for day and night for about 2 or 3 weeks in a row, they set bud. So that's one of the reasons that they bloom shortly after the first day of fall or the first day of spring, is because that's when days naturally even out. But if they're in an environment that also has good dark nights and bright days, and maybe it's supplemented with artificial lighting, they can bloom any time. And like yours, mine bloom 4 or 5 times a year, it seems. And some flushes, it seems like the spring, the mid-spring flush and the Thanksgiving time flush are the two big ones, but then they'll send out a couple flowers here and there the rest of the year. And that, it just is great. You just don't have to do a whole lot for a lot of reward. Those flowers are so interesting.
You know, like a Phalaenopsis orchid, this is probably one of my favorite indoor plants for flowers, because when someone walks into my office, their eye just goes right to that plant when it's in blossom, because it's really scarlet red. Now, I've seen there's like a hot pink. I've seen these in white. Are there any other colors that the flowers come in?
There's a whole bunch of yellow and peach colors now that are available. I've got a yellow at home.
Mm.
They've crossed the yellow and some of the pinks to end up with some peach colors. It's just always, they always seem to be adding a few new colors every year. We primarily only get them in the late fall, the holiday season. That's when they're the most available at our shop. And every year when they come in, if I see a new color, I always have to snag it.
Yeah.
It's funny because our customers do the same thing. They know when the season starts at our store. And so they come in and are ready to pick up those rare colors before anybody else can get them.
So how do you keep your house from being just full of plants?
Well, it is just full of plants.
With having enough room to live in.
Well, that the nice thing is it's pretty much winter that's tough. I've got shady patios that I move stuff out in the summer, but every single one of my windows is jammed full of plants. It's one of the drawbacks of being a plant addict is you pretty much take every prime bit of real estate in your home that can have a plant. Every table has a plant. Every corner has a plant.
I all these plants that you've brought in over the year, I want to run right out and get one and put it in, because I think, oh, here's another great location for it. But there's nothing better, at least for me, when I walk into a living space and you see plants. It softens the edges of the home, and whether you're in an apartment or have a large house or in your office, it just makes it more of a living space.
What does? It's good. It's also good for you. I mean, plants are filtering the air. They're doing their thing pretty much all day long and cleaning, taking toxins out of the air, stuff that our carpeting and our paint on our walls and stuff is putting out, and it's taking it, it's locking that in its root system so that we're not breathing it in. So it's a good thing to have plants, and you don't have to be a crazy plant addict. You know, every space of your home or apartment, like you said, you just soften certain spots, and there are plants that will grow in almost any situation. It's just knowing to get the right one for that. It's often people, when they fail, it's because they've taken and they've picked a plant for its appearance and not for its ability to grow in the situation that they want it to be in. So there's a little bit of give and take that you have to do with that.
Now, the one we've been talking about today is the zygocactus, and I've got to ask just a couple more questions. I also have one that my grandmother gave to me before she passed away, and she called it an Easter cactus. And they have rounded leaves rather than the jagged leaves with the Christmas cactus. And the flower, it's kind of the same color, that scarlet color, but it looks more like a fringed skirt rather than this kind of a pointed, many-leveled type of flower. Is it the same family?
It's not the same family. Well, okay, it is the same family. It's a different genus, though. So the spring cactus come from cooler climates. And although they grow very similar in appearance, they do have those, it's more of a daisy-like flower mm-hmm. versus the Christmas cactus is more of a tube-like flower. And the spring cactus requires, instead of the day and night thing, it requires colder temperatures. So you have to give it temperature swings of about 20 degrees between day and night in order for it to set bud and flower.
The light bulb just went on. So I'm like, okay, well, this makes total sense because it's in my south living room and I might get one or two on it, but it just never looks that great. So I need to be putting this in a darker area as well, or just a cooler area?
Just a cooler area. This is actually a good one to bring out on your patio in the summer. And you want to put it on a shady patio, and you want to leave it out there all summer long and into the fall. And when they start forecasting for temperatures, maybe in the upper 30s at that point at night, then you bring it in. And that gives it enough time to feel that temperature change between day and night that it will set bud and bloom.
Another light bulb just went off. My grandmother used to put it on her back porch.
That'll do it. Yeah, right there.
Okay. Well, you've been listening to The Zesty Garden. Shane Taylor is the horticultural specialist and buyer with Cactus and Tropicals. And today's recommended plant is the zygocactus, or Christmas cactus, as it's otherwise known. Shane, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Brian.